Today, we'll talk about five things I learned about Disney World in 2014. That's coming up on this episode 70 of WW Prep to Go. Hello and welcome to WW Prep to Go, where we talk Disney World strategy and ideas for people planning their trips. I am your host, Shannon Albert from WDWPrepSchool.com. Thank you so much for being here for episode 70. It is the last episode of 2014, and I'm just excited to be here. We've had the podcast now for a year and a few months, and I just love doing it and happy to have you here listening. Before we dive into today's topic, a few quick reminders that you can always follow outside of the podcast, not only on the website, but on the Facebook page where I share as many tips as I can, including recently some tips on how to get some Disney related merchandise that many people were able to pick up for their kids before Christmas Day. That's facebook.com/WWPrepSchool. There's also lots of ideas posted to Pinterest every day, around a dozen posted to pinterest.com/WWPrepSchool. I'm also on Instagram and Twitter and just all over the place. So be sure to connect there outside of the podcast. I also wanted to mention that last week, if you happen to listen to the previous episode, which was a first timers report, you will notice, if you made it through the very long episode, that there were children included in the after report. And that's because I am going to start making an effort to include children as much as possible. I know that many of you listen with your children, or even if you don't listen with your children, many of you have children, and so it's nice to hear a kid's perspective. So the beginning of that effort was last week when I asked the family to include their children in the after report. But the next episode, 1 week from now, is going to be a Q&A to answer questions that have been submitted by kids. And the way that that is going to work is that you can use the link in the show notes, which will allow you to leave a message through your computer, or you can download the app to your phone or iPad. It is the SpeakPipe app, and you can click on the information in the show notes from your phone or iPad, and you can leave the message through the app, or you can leave it on your computer. And I would ask that you leave the child, I would ask that the child leave the message, and if possible, leave the first name, age, and the question, and then I will possibly include it on the next episode when I answer questions that have been submitted by children. There is a maximum of 3 minutes, so make the question fairly quick before you run out of time. If you don't want to call in, but you do want to submit it by email, you can email podcast@wdwprepschool.com and submit the information that way. And then I can read it during the episode. Again, leave first name, age, and question, even if you do submit by email. And so I will compile some of the best questions and include it in the next episode. And my fingers are crossed that my son will help me answer some questions, because he is very knowledgeable about Disney World. He's been going most of his life. And the only problem is that he's pretty shy. So getting him to come on the microphone is a challenge. I've been asking him for a long time, but he said he might do one episode with me. So I'm hoping it'll be this one. So go ahead and submit any questions that you have from children. And next week's episode will be an episode where I answer those questions. So today we're going to talk about five things that I've learned about Disney World this year. And these are not necessarily things that are new, completely new. These are sort of just five things that I have come across, that I've realized, that I've changed my mind about, you know, et cetera. These may not be new to you, but these are things that I have learned this year. And so I thought I'd just go over those in case there are things that you may not have known, or maybe, you know, didn't understand why I felt a certain way about some of these topics. So let's just go through these and I'll sort of explain what each one means. The first one that I have learned is that Animal Kingdom seems to always be an easy place to visit, no matter what. That means on holidays, that means on extra magic hour days, etc. And I know that I've always known that Animal Kingdom was a good place to visit compared to the other parks, but it really never seems to be a bad place to visit Overall, I have been there when it was busy, but chances are if it was busy, the other parks were really busy as well. But one thing I've noticed is that in general, I don't recommend extra magic hour parks just because they tend to be busier than the others because most people on site will go to those parks. But in watching Animal Kingdom's wait times and sort of being in the parks myself and feeling, you know, how busy it feels, Animal Kingdom just never seems to have the surge of people that the other parks do, even on extra magic hour days. And certainly that's in part due to its popularity. It's not as popular as the other parks. So even if it's having an extra magic hour, people are often not visiting there, but it's also in part, it's also due to the fact that Animal Kingdom is just huge. So it can really support larger crowds. So, you know, Animal Kingdom, as I'm creating my crowd charts, people often say, how do you go about recommending which parks to go to each day? And in general, that process is to avoid extra magic hour parks and avoid parks that are having special events that might make them busier, such as Food and Wine Festival, which makes Epcot really busy. You would want to avoid that. So, you know, that's the general recommendation. But when it comes to Animal Kingdom, even if it does have an extra magic hour, I always just make it yellow. I never make it red, which would mean I wouldn't recommend visiting that day. Of course, you know, this is all a guess that anybody who does crowd charts is just making a guess. Even the sites that purport to use data to back up their guesses are really just making educated guesses like the rest of us based on what we've learned in the past. You know, meteorologists don't make weather forecasts for 6 months from now based on data. They have to use data along with, you know, a lot of information that's current for this year in order to make their forecasts. And so it's the same with the crowd prediction charts. But it was just my observation that this year, Animal Kingdom, it in my observations, just never really seems to get that busy. Whereas in the past, I would have said, definitely avoid Animal Kingdom extra magic hour days. So it's always a good bet if you're looking for a place to visit when it's busy, or, you know, don't be scared to visit there on an extra magic hour day. Number two is going to feel like a contradiction to what I just said. Number two is that I have realized this year that extra magic hours actually can be very valuable, especially if you have park hopper tickets. Now, I'm still not going to recommend the parks that are having extra magic hours in general, because if you are going to go to a park for the whole day and stay there, you know, from morning to night, then extra magic hour parks are going to be busy. However, if you have park hopper tickets, which will allow you to go to more than one park per day, then extra magic hours can be very, very valuable, especially when the parks are really busy. And this is just in contrast to what I've, you know, generally felt in the past, which was, definitely avoid extra magic hours. But my feeling now is that they can be super helpful as long as you have the flexibility to hop. And I think especially with the crowd surging, you know, Disney World has had some record crowds, especially in the last few months, then I think that these can be very, very helpful, especially in the morning, and especially if Magic Kingdom happens to have extra magic hours that go quite late, because most people will not be up at those times. So, you know, if Magic Kingdom is having a 7 or 8 a.m. extra magic hour for people who are staying on site, then I say wake up and take full advantage and stay for a little while until it starts to get busy or feel busy, and then hop to another park that does not have quite the crowds that the extra magic hour park does. I just think it can be super helpful and allow you to actually get a lot done in a short amount of time, especially if you are trying to do something that has been difficult to get a FastPass Plus for, such as meeting Anna and Elsa or riding Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. You can do those during the extra magic hours with fewer crowds than you will in the middle of the day. And the same is true for the late night, especially Magic Kingdom, which sometimes has extra magic hours that go till 2 or 3 in the morning during certain parts of the year. Most people will not stay up that late, but if you want to, then those can be, you know, sometimes even better than the morning extra magic hours. So that's often a good thing to take advantage of as well. Number three is that you can use separate credit cards on a Disney World Resort room for room charges. And I think this may have been a quick tip of the day. I can't recall right now. But this is really interesting to me because I never knew it was possible until fairly recently. Because when you go on the website to set up your account, it only asks you for one credit card. And as long as you have that one credit card saved, and when you check in, they'll say, okay, do you want to use that one credit card for all your charges? And you confirm. And, you know, it's that credit card that's used. So it never occurred to me to ask if they would allow more than one credit card. But several readers have confirmed that they have done it, and that, and this can be very convenient, especially if you have multiple adults traveling who are paying for, you know, their own part of the trip, but sharing the room with you. So I guess the way that you do this is at check-in, you just ask them to set up different credit cards for different people, and they will do that. But there is something that you have, that is something that you have to sort of keep tabs on, because they often do mess up the charges, even if you've asked and they have entered all your information. So, you know, definitely check your charges when you are after you leave your hotel, and make sure that they did it correctly. If not, you can give them a call and have them straighten that out for you. But I just think this is super helpful, and something I just did not know until this year. And so if you have multiple people traveling, that might be something that you can use for your own trip as well. Number four is, for the first time that I remember, fall is now pretty busy. Now, you know, 1 year is not a trend, but this year fall was very busy, enough that it is making me nervous, and I'm going to actually likely change my 2015 calendar based on information that I have observed or learned this year. So I think there are a few factors. Fall is now busy because of a few factors. So I think that Anna and Elsa definitely contributed. The whole Frozen craze made a lot of people want to take their kids to Disney World and see all the Frozen things, even though there actually isn't too much to see. Disney certainly played that up and asked people to bring their children, and I think they did. I think that's one reason. I think another reason is that there are a lot of fall breaks that people have in their school districts that they didn't used to have. I think the economy has improved a lot, and I think so there's a lot of factors, I think, that went into people flooding to Disney World this fall, whereas it used to be a pretty lightly traveled time to go, so much so that they offered free dining. I mean, free dining wasn't offered to be nice. It was offered because they wanted to get people there when the parks were relatively empty. Many years ago, they used to offer specials for people that had little kids. And I actually went during that time. They offered like Disney Junior entertainers from the TV show in the parks, so that you would bring your little kids when the school kids were not visiting. I mean, fall used to be kind of dead, and this year it was really not. And so based on that, I'm now in my head thinking, okay, fall is a pretty busy time, and I need to reevaluate how I think about the crowds then. So I'm actually going to probably end up taking a poll, and just asking people how the school calendars look for their district for fall, and just see if we can figure out when a lot of the school breaks are scheduled, so we can maybe make some predictions based on that. But this year it was pretty solidly busy in September, October, November. So much so that Disney was making schedule changes up until the last minute, and even adding new shows, you know, the day of. You know, people were like, I didn't even know there was going to be an extra Fantasmic schedule tonight, but sure enough, it was. Even during Christmas week, they actually scheduled 3 Fantasmic, something I've never seen before. So things are just really, really busy right now. And I'm not sure if it will continue to next year. But based on this year, I think it's something definitely worth looking at. And so, you know, people who are asking me, when's the least busy time to go? I'm not confident in recommending the fall based on this year. I am confident in recommending early May. So that's currently my favorite time to visit, is early May, because there aren't fall breaks then. And it, you know, Star Wars weekends are available in mid-May, and the Flower and Garden Festival is available at Epcot, and it's warm enough to swim. The crowds are still, should be fairly light still. So anyway, if somebody asked me, that's what I would say. But fall, I'm feeling a little less confident about. And so if this year is any indication, it may now start to be a much busier time. Number five is that rides that didn't used to require fast passes now often do. So the Fast Pass Plus system It was in testing in 2013, and it was implemented in full force in 2014. And so this sort of changed the way that a lot of things worked. And one of those things was that there are many rides that didn't used to require a fast pass at all, and now they do. So there are a few examples of this. I'm not going to have a full list, but Pirates of the Caribbean is one that a lot of people mention and have observed. Another one is sometimes Haunted Mansion falls into this category, Spaceship Earth. And I actually observed Turtle Talk with Crush to be one of those as well, that sometimes the lines can be quite long. I didn't used to ever have to wait at that show. And on a recent trip, we actually had to wait through one or two shows in order to get in. And so on my next trip, I booked a fast pass so that I wouldn't have to wait. But some of these things didn't used to require it. So what I often run into is if I suggest these as a fast pass, I'll get people commenting and saying, "You're crazy, that doesn't require a fast pass." And that's true that it didn't used to, but a lot of these sort of B-list, B-level, less popular rides, but I'm calling them B-list because they're not one of the top ones. They're not Seven Dwarfs Mine Train or Soarin', but they're still relatively popular. They can often be a good use of a fast pass just because of the way that the lines and the shift in the crowds have changed because of Fast Pass Plus. So this has sort of been a shift in thinking and recommendations because things have changed. More people are playing ahead of time. There are more people that are getting those fast passes. You know, they couldn't necessarily get Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, but they were able to get Haunted Mansion, so they did. So the people getting in the standby line now have to wait for those fast pass people to go through. So anyway, it's just sort of changed the way that things work for many of the rides. So that's my five things I've kind of learned or observed this year. Just as a bonus, and this is a cheesy sort of addition to this list, but one thing I learned this year is that podcast listeners are the best. And I'm not a particularly cheesy person, but I mean that completely and totally. I have heard some podcasters trying to justify continuing their podcast because it takes quite a bit of time to plan, record, to edit the audio, to, you know, publish it, et cetera. And the numbers are much lower. So, the number of podcast listeners pales in comparison to, page views on the website or Facebook likes or, you know, whatever metric you can name. Podcast listeners are always going to be less. So if you're going to compare them like that, then you may not end up wanting to continue the podcast. But what is way different is that podcast listeners are much higher quality. So to compare a podcast listener to a Facebook like is crazy to me because podcast listeners are so much more engaged and so much more enthusiastic. And it's just a totally different world. And so, you know, sometimes I have difficulty getting the podcast out on a weekly basis. You know, it's a weekend and sometimes the topics are hard to come up with or, you know, organize the information or whatever. But at the end of the day, it's completely worth it because you guys are so fantastic that it's worth continuing. So I just wanted to add that on as a bonus thing that I've learned this year and maybe a nice way to wrap up 2014. As always, I do have a quick tip of the day before we wrap up this episode. So today's quick tip is about a few of the restaurants at Disney World, which are considered Landry's Select restaurants. Landry's owns lots and lots of restaurants nationwide, and a few of them happen to be at Disney World. So Rainforest Cafe, there are two locations at Disney World. Those are Landry's, T-Rex Cafe, and Yak and Yeti. So that's four restaurants at Disney World that are Landry's Select. Landry's Select Club is something you can sign up for through Landry's, and it costs $25 to do it one time, but you immediately get $25 back in a credit that you can use towards your meal. But you also get $25 to use during your birthday month. You get priority seating in all the restaurants. You get 10% off any retail items that you buy at these restaurants, etc. So I just wanted to mention to you, because if you happen to have reservations at Rainforest Cafe, T-Rex Cafe, or Yak and Yeti, it might be worth it to sign up for Landry's Select Club beforehand and get some discounts and priority seating. I will, of course, include a link to the page on the Landry's website so that you can look into that for your own trip. I think that's going to wrap up this episode of WGW Prep to Go. For more information on this episode, you can visit wgwprepschool.com/episode70. That is the number 70. Until next time, I will see you on the site.